Hello there and welcome into the show. I'm Adrian Healy in the pleasurable company of Steve Nicol and Shaq Hislop. That's not all. We have Julian Laron and Sid Lowe who'll be joining us momentarily. We'll start in the English FA Cup. One last fifth round midweek game to play, and it went the way of Manchester United against their old boy, of course, Wayne Rooney. 3-0, the margin of victory. All very comfortable for the moment. Luke Shaw gave them the lead. Igalo making it two before the break, and then Igalo getting his second of the game near the end. Wayne Rooney kept off the score sheet. Julian Laron is with us. Julian, this winning thing for Manchester United is becoming a bit of a habit now.
Yes, you're right. It's a very good spell at the moment for Solskjaer and the team. They look very in control tonight. They look very mature. I thought it was a very strong side as well, which shows you, one, the importance of the FA Cup, that competition for United and Solskjaer, but also that in Solskjaer's mind, he was already aware of preparing for the derby on Sunday by putting such a strong team out. And it was the difference with Derby County, who rotated a lot, Philippe Cocu, a lot of youngsters as well. So it was not their best side, and they were definitely being dominated by United from start to finish.
Mm. Stevie, the naysayers will say, well, it was only Derby County. They're only a championship team. But
you know, we're always talking about you can only beat who's in front of you. Mm. And my problem with United most of the season has been away from home. They can't beat teams that they're supposed to.
Yeah.
And for me, it has to be about the next away match. Can they string two together? Mm. You know, they were fantastic when they played City in the Carabao Cup away from home, but then they couldn't back it up. This performance was comfortable. Can they back it up? That's the question.
Well, they will have to go on the road again in the next round. Just a reprisal of what the quarterfinal draw, the completed quarterfinal draw, now looks like. It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because all the big boys are away from home. Arsenal at Sheffield United, Manchester City at Newcastle. United now go to Carrow Road at Norwich, and Chelsea will be at Leicester City. Those games over the weekend of March the 21st. According to the odds makers, Manchester City are overwhelmingly the favourites to win the FA Cup. You can't even get even money on them. 8-11, Chelsea, Arsenal and Manchester United, 8 and 9 to 1 respectively. Can anyone stop Manchester City, Shaq?
Shouldn't be able to, if Manchester City take this as seriously as they can. The issue for City is they're still in the Champions League, and that will remain their holy grail. So you can understand if Guardiola decides to make changes, if the players have one eye on whatever is to come in that competition. It also helps that the teams lying third and fourth in the Premier League right now are drawn against each other. So right now, as you said, it's City's cup to lose. All that being said, as much criticism as we levelled at Manchester United, in particular over the course of the season, all of a sudden now we're sitting here talking about a team that's gone 9 unbeaten. And coming into a big Manchester derby, given what happened in the League Cup, particularly at Old Trafford, and then how they reversed it at the Etihad, you wonder how both of these teams are going to approach it, with bragging rights at stake, because, let's be honest, there's little else at stake between these two. But if Guardiola decides to field a full-strength team, there's no reason why they shouldn't win it.
Meanwhile, Jules, one name, of course, still noticeably absent from that Manchester United lineup. Guess who I'm talking about? Mr. Paul Pogba. When might he wear a United shirt again? Because there are reports surfacing he's returning to training next week.
Yes, it's very soon now that Paul Pogba should be on the pitch again for Manchester United. He's back at Carrington now. I was told that he could actually start training this week. I saw Ole Gunnar Solskjaer saying he might be more next week. Obviously, they don't want to take any risk right now because they want him fully fit and at his best between now and the end of the season. So I think that the Manchester derby was always too early. I think they may be more looking at the Europa League first leg against LASK, or maybe the second leg will be Old Trafford against the Austrian side. And maybe that's the perfect game for him to come back and get a bit of game time. And then little by little, they're going to increase that game time so that he can be fully fit and starting game and playing the whole 90 minutes very soon.
If you get Pogba and Bruno Fernandes together in that midfield, that's pretty tasty for a run, little FA Cup.
You know the worrying thing
top
is?
Top four?
Bruno Fernandes already has kind of made this United team his. Mm. He's always the guy they want to give the ball to.
Mm.
Does that affect it when Pogba appears?
You mean he's going to be hogging that ball as well?
Play two balls.
Yeah, we shall see. Nice problem to have for United, though, if it happens. Remember, extra time, your questions answered every single day. You can see it on our YouTube channel. Now, the headline in Sport in Catalonia. Go ahead for Neymar, but not for Mbappe, connected to a potential move to Barcelona. Lots of speculation about the future of both of PSG's star players. Let's get the latest thoughts from Jules and Sid. Jules, start with you. How do you read the situation with both players at the moment?
I think it's very, very, very simple. In Paris, at the club, they're getting ready for what should be a very animated summer. And once again, we know very much that there will be a lot of rumours, a lot of allegations, maybe a lot of talks. And at the club, they're pretty clear. The door was open for Neymar last summer. I believe it will still be open this summer. And if Barcelona can find the money, and we're talking probably around 150 million euros, then they might well find an agreement. For Mbappe, on the other hand, the door was closed last summer and the summer before, and the door will be closed this summer again. That doesn't mean that Mbappe can't try to force out a move or, I don't know, whatever, and Real Madrid can still come and make an offer or a few offers. But PSG are saying, Neymar, maybe, but Mbappe is not going anywhere this summer. And we know that there's a deal, a new deal on the table offered by PSG for Mbappe, that Mbappe and his parents will look into at the end of the season. They might decide to sign it. They might not decide to sign it. And that will also have an influence on the future, on the short future of Kylian Mbappe at the club. But right now, PSG are adamant that he's not going to go anywhere. Whereas for Neymar, it's a different story.
Sid, how do you see it? Are we going to see Neymar at Barcelona and Mbappe at Madrid come the start of the new season?
Well, Jules has just said it there, if Barcelona can find the money. And at the moment, they can't. They don't have that money. They know that the players, or some of the players, want Neymar to come. They know that Neymar wants to come. And I think that they think, politically at least, that it might help them to sign him. But they haven't got the money to make this happen. And they particularly haven't got the money to make this happen if they're also going to go and pursue Lautaro Martinez, which is what they say they want to do. And so, what are they going to do? Well, they're probably going to do what we saw a glimpse of during this winter window, and we're probably going to do what we saw them try to do in the summer but were unable to do, which is to try and sell players, to try and use sales to generate money to bring new players in. But frankly, you look at the squad right now, and there's not enough sale value. There is not enough there to make this happen. So, how Barcelona make this happen, I don't know. Will they try? I think they will. But I'm not sure that they'll try hard enough. Remember what Messi said back in August or September after the window closed. He said, yes, Barcelona tried to get Neymar, but I don't know if they tried hard enough.
Jules, how about potentially Antoine Griezmann being thrown in and making the move to Paris to help facilitate the move of Neymar?
That could potentially be an option from the Barcelona side, although I'm not really sure that in Paris they would see that as a, you know, as a positive or as a good option for them. I mean, if they sell Neymar, they would want to replace him by someone who has a similar profile, for example, a Jadon Sancho, which I think a lot of people at the club are really keen on, like a lot of other clubs, and that a lot of people in Paris see as a very good replacement for Neymar if Neymar was to leave. But I agree with Sid. Right now, and in Paris, they know this as well. They know that Barcelona right now don't have the money. They also know that for Real Madrid, if they want to make an offer and want to make the Mbappe deal, they will need to find a lot of money as well over there, because Mbappe won't come cheap at all. So it would be a game of poker once again this summer, like we saw with Neymar, Barca and PSG last summer. I'm just not sure exactly what the outcome would be yet.
Sid, Mbappe to Madrid. There seems to be growing disharmony, let's call it that, between Mbappe and Thomas Tuchel.
That's certainly what Madrid want, I think. Madrid are very keen on this. They've watched this happen. They believe that every single time there's some sort of confrontation, or every time there's a hint of a relationship not being as good as it should be, they're thinking, this is great. This is another step towards us. Now, obviously, the other thing, as Jules mentioned there, is the situation with Mbappe's contract at Paris Saint-Germain. And Madrid, of course, are behind the scenes trying to say to him, look, when they offer you a new contract, don't take it. Because the best way to be able to get a player out of a club that doesn't want to sell him is for that player's contract to come to an end or to go into those final sort of 18 months or so at which the club thinks, actually, maybe we should let this happen now. And until that happens, I don't think Madrid can do this. Look, there's a really good lesson in all of this, a really good example, which is the signing of Eden Hazard. Real Madrid signed him this summer for 100 million euros because he was in the last year of his deal. They've been trying for 3 years. You can't just go and buy anyone you want anymore, even if you are Real Madrid.
Jules, are PSG nervous? How nervous are they that they could be losing Mbappe?
They're quite confident in what they're briefing us. Leonardo has brought a lot of discipline back to the club, and he's quite confident that his relationship with Mbappe and the Mbappe family is good enough, and that Mbappe, who, let's not forget, just turned 21 2 months ago. So it's not like if he was coming to the end of his career and that his dream that he's always talked about to play for Real Madrid one day was maybe not being possible. He still has so many years ahead of him to one day come to the Bernabeu that in Paris they said to him, listen, take your time. You can still stay here in France, in Paris, improve, keep your progress, you know, learn a lot, get some experience, get some maturity, you know, whatever. And then you make the switch at some point. They're under no illusion that one day Kylian Mbappe will play for Real Madrid. They just don't want it to be this summer or not in a near future.
Meanwhile, Jules, big story in England. Apparently, sources close to Harry Kane have indicated that the Spurs forward would be keen on a move to Manchester United. Any chance you can see that happening?
Yeah, of course. I mean, there's the biggest chance is if Mauricio Pochettino arrives at Manchester United in the summer, which is still a possibility, and takes over Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And then you could obviously see the appeal for Harry Kane to then be reunited with the manager that gave him everything pretty much so far in his career in a club like Manchester United, who will then rebuild their team around Harry Kane and Pochettino, and will have the financial power to build a very competitive team, which is not the case at Spurs right now. So you could understand maybe why Harry Kane right now is just wondering and pondering his future, considering in the direction that Spurs are going to, which is, let's be honest, not the greatest and not the clearest, compared to if another big project was offered to him, especially if Pochettino was there. However, let's not also forget that Harry Kane just signed a new deal last year, that he's under contract under 2024, and that we all know how Daniel Levy does his business, and it would be a hell of a deal to make for whoever wants to come for Harry Kane, and a very, very expensive one as well.
Meanwhile, finally, Jules, Jurgen Klopp remains apparently very interested in the services of one Timo Werner. How likely do you think it is that he'll be wearing a Liverpool shirt next season?
Yes, I think this one is really serious. First of all, because in the new deal that Timo Werner signed with RB Leipzig, the release clause is at 60 million euros, let's say around 50 million pounds, which is, I think, a bargain for a player like Timo Werner. Right now, Timo Werner should be a player that costs at least 100 million euros. And to get him for almost half the price, I think it's a bargain. And I think Jurgen Klopp knows far too well how talented Timo Werner is, how versatile Timo Werner is, and how cheap Timo Werner is right now. And I think he's right to go for him. Whether that happens or not, a lot of other things, we need to go Liverpool way. But I believe that Klopp wants reinforcement up front, and that Timo Werner is the one that he's after. And with all the points I've just mentioned, it makes a lot of sense for Klopp and Liverpool to go for him and to get him.
27 goals in 34 appearances in all competitions so far for Timo Werner. You can keep up to date with all the latest transfer talk updated on an almost hourly basis on our website, ESPNFC.com. In Spain, a place in the Copa del Rey final at stake. Semi-final second leg. You saw it on ESPN Plus a little earlier on. Granada and Athletic Bilbao. Bilbao up 1-0 on aggregate from the first leg. Yangel Herrera's header saved off the line just before the break.
Oh, it's Iñaki Williams, the centre-forward. What's he doing there?
Yeah. But Granada were not to be denied. Just after the break, it was Carlos Fernandez who rose to meet the cross.
This really is a wonderful header by Fernandez. Gets just enough of it inside the post, just inside, no saving goals.
And then another header inside the final quarter of an hour, this one from Herman Sanchez. 2-0, Granada in front.
Listen, it's a good challenge and he ends up getting the ball home, but is anybody going to put somebody on the post at corners?
At the moment, Granada going through. Athletic Bilbao, though, had the final say. Yuri Berchichi scoring a late goal that made all the difference.
From a very tight angle, had support through the middle, but chose to go on his own, and it paid off.
So 2-1 on the night. Not enough for Granada. Athletic Bilbao through, even though it was 2-2 on aggregate. The away goal doing it. Real Sociedad, of course, had won the previous night against Miranda's. The final, an all-Basque affair on ESPN+. Plus, April the 17th, the date. Real Sociedad against Athletic Bilbao. That should really be something special. Let's bring Sid Lowe into the show. And Sid, a little secret. I think you were supposed to be at that Granada game tonight, weren't you? What happened?
Yeah, I missed the train to get there, so I jumped in a taxi and went dashing to the bus station and missed the bus to get there as well, so didn't make it, sadly. I was supposed to be at both of those Copa del Rey semi-finals. I was only at the one in Miranda del Ebro last night, wasn't at the one tonight. I'll be at the final, though, and I think this is going to be so special. It's very difficult, genuinely it's difficult, to do justice to just how different Basque football is to the rest of Spain, to just how deeply rooted in their traditions, in their history, these two clubs are, how huge this game is going to be. The Basque derby is one of the best games of the season, every season, and now it's in a Copa del Rey final. They've never played each other in a Copa del Rey final. These are two clubs, in Real Sociedad's case, it's 32 years since they're in a final. These are two clubs who won four league titles in a row between them at the beginning of the 80s, but haven't won anything since then. This will be huge. It will be mixed as well. There'll be fans in both sections of the ground, all the way through the ground. Seville is going to be a lot of fun.
So the Serie A standings looking like this. Remember, Lazio were the only team in action last weekend. They made full advantage of it. 2 points clear of Juventus, who are another six ahead of Inter Milan. Juventus and Inter Milan will take place this Sunday behind closed doors. Meanwhile, next week in the Champions League, only one Italian team in action. That would be Atalanta, nursing a very handy 4-1 lead, probably behind closed doors as well, with their trip to Valencia. And on the subject of Atalanta, the Juventus chairman, Andrea Agnelli, saying this: there needs to be a discussion about the opportunity to have direct access to these competitions because you are part of a great league. I have a lot of respect for Atalanta, but they got into the Champions League on the back of one good season and without any history of international competition. Is that fair? Take Roma, who over the last few years have contributed to maintaining Italy's high UEFA ranking and yet miss out because of one bad season, with all the financial implications that brings. We have to protect investments. So let's welcome into the show Sid Lowe. And Sid, I'm simply, first of all, going to let you loose on Andrea Agnelli's quote. What do you make of it?
Well, I feel like I don't need to talk for very long. I feel I can give you the shortest answer I've ever given, albeit I'm now talking in a way that means it won't be quite so short. But let me answer very clearly. He says in that quote, is it fair? Yes. Mm.
Yeah. I don't think you'll get any argument from the boys here in the studio at all. It seems
where does it come from? I don't understand where this has come from. I could understand if there was a slight against his club in some sort of way, or if he in fact was the boss of Roma, I could see where his argument is, but why is he throwing this out?
Mm. Jules, I think you have a thought on where it's coming from, perhaps, from Agnelli.
Yeah, it's not surprising at all, Andrea Agnelli. He's the leading football director, if you want, to try to go for a Super League. That's the idea that he has, is that you could have a Super League that is closed with always the same club, that will bring far more money to the club than they do now with the Champions League, for example, without the risk of not qualifying for the Champions League, for example, like in his example, Roma are in risk of doing, unlike Atalanta, who looks clearly like they did last year, qualifying for the Champions League. And I think that's Agnelli's idea. That's a lot of other clubs' idea as well. And so far, UEFA and Champions League have resisted or have fought the idea to keep the Champions League in the format that it is. Although there were already some talks and some sort of pre-agreement that you would have, four Spanish clubs, four Italian clubs, four English clubs, four German clubs, always there, always the same club qualifying for the Champions League in years to come. So we're not far already from a Super League. But if people like Agnelli have their way, it would certainly be always the same clubs going through to the Champions League, regardless of their finish in the table each season.
They want to close shop, Shaka, apparently.
They've always wanted that. And listen, from the time I saw these comments from Agnelli, that's exactly what I thought. This is a thinly veiled sell of a European Super League. You can't say that, well, because Atalanta had one good season to get into the Champions League for one season. If Roma have one bad season and they miss out for one season, that's fair. That's football. But from the time you start twisting this, twisting the rules of the game, I mean, either you're posturing for European Super League or you're posturing for something even more sinister, that these big clubs deserve some kind of a boost regardless. And it's ridiculous and wrong, and I think everybody's kind of unanimous in that feeling.
Sid, it wasn't just the message. Go on, Sid.
So I was just going to say that, by the way, that Shaq said the word there. This is football. You know, this is what happens in football. So we don't want teams here who have earned the right to be here. We want teams here who have enough money to earn the right to be here. I mean, look, if you take his argument, which is spurious, just absurdly spurious, if you take his argument to its logical conclusion, what is his argument? Oh, no, we don't want this team in the cup final because they just have one good semi-final. They had one good season in the cup. We don't want them in the final. Oh, no, we don't want Leicester winning. Well, actually, a lot of these teams don't want teams like Leicester winning the league. We don't want Leicester winning the league just because they had one good season. These are people who have absolutely no idea what football is. They have no idea at all. They have an idea of what their business is, but not what football is. This is summed up in a phrase. These are people who know the price of everything and the value of nothing.
Go on, Stevie.
No, I'm just, you know, listen, we always have to have an open mind, and things are always changing in football. And so far, it's all changed for the better. The only thing you can say about a Super League is after that, after what Agnelli wants, there is nowhere to go. Because if you can't get in and you can't get out, where does the game go after that? It's the end.
Well, you have to wonder what Mr. Agnelli would make of Getafe potentially making a Champions League. Sid, well, while we have you, as you look at the La Liga standings, that is the case at the moment with Getafe in fourth place behind Sevilla. Of course, Barcelona and Real Madrid locked together now at the top, just the 1 point between them. Can't let you go, Sid, without you giving us your latest prognosis, which way the title is going.
Well, the title race, I mean, obviously, you look at this and you think Real Madrid are favourites. In truth, 2 weeks ago, we'd have said Madrid were favourites. We then arrived at the Clásico in a situation which Barcelona had a fabulous opportunity to leave them 5 points behind, plus head-to-head goal difference. And I think had they taken that, then that balance would tip. But all the way through the season, it has felt that while they haven't been sparkling, Madrid have been that bit more reliable, that little bit more solid. And that victory in the Clásico, while it's only a 1 point lead at the top of the table, and given the problems that Barcelona have, I think it's very difficult to look beyond Madrid. But it is still very tight.
It is indeed. More of Jules can be found on the Gab and Jules podcast. That is available every week. Latest edition has just dropped. You can find that on our Pod Center and also via Apple Podcasts.
There's Crispy. And then there's Crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy.
Meanwhile, this was the Monaco player, Gelson Martins. Remember this in a French league game against Nîmes, pushing the referee. Well, the verdict has come down from the French Federation. He's going to be banned 6 months for that incident. As I say, in the league game against Nîmes. Julie Laurent still with us. Jules, I guess we were waiting what the punishment would be. Is this harsh?
It's tough. I think it's tough, but that's what the club expected, really. We knew that the discipline committee of the French Federation would hit him hard, because it's not just even once that he pushes the referee. If you look at the footage again, it's twice in the space of like 20 seconds, and Gelson Martins really lost his mind on that night away at Nîmes, and now he's paying the price for it, because 6 months from February the 6th, so obviously the season is over for him and he can play only next season, but it's a big blow for him, it's a big blow for Monaco. But again, even if it's tough and harsh, it's deserved, because you just can't push the referee like he did twice in the same game.
Yeah, there aren't many precedents to judge it by Paolo Di Canio, of course. Was the famous one a few years ago. He got 10 games, I think.
Yeah.
6 months, right, Shankar?
It does seem tough, in all honesty. But it's this season and then a lot of the off-season. So maybe that makes it seem not as bad as maybe it is in practice. But listen, the authorities have to make a stand here, and you cannot be taking this kind of position with officials.
Have to make a stand, but is that the right verdict, Steve?
Oh, why?
Yeah,
absolutely.
6 months.
There are certain things that you can and can't do.
Yeah,
and one of them is any sort of confrontation physically with the referee.
Mm.
You learn that as a kid.
Mm.
So the fact that this guy does it as a professional, he deserves every month that he got.
Well, the one thing you can't do in this studio is confront Shaka on his power rankings.
Yeah. You want a bet?
Which about?
Speaking of 6 months, it's been about 6 months since Liverpool have been off number one.
Right.
Or have been number one. But they're down. That's after a terrible run of form. Bayern Munich top.
I'm not arguing.
Right, good.
No argument with Bayern Munich.
I'm happy that you're not. I'm giving Lazio lots of love.
They deserve it.
I know they played a game more than everybody else in Italy, but they get all kinds of love.
Mm.
And then the usual suspects, City, Dortmund in fantastic form. We see how 5 and 6 play out in the Champions League this week.
Mm.
Real Madrid have dropped, even though they beat Barcelona.
See, you knew I was going to say
that. Yeah, I knew I was going to say it.
Look, whatever happened to you're only as good as your last game?
Mm. Well,
because if you're only good as your last game, surely that would get Real Madrid back up that ranking.
You're only as good as your last power rankings. And I've been away in Trinidad for Carnival. They lost to City in the Champions League. So that's a no-no. You're done.
Let's get Julian's assessment on this rejuvenated power rankings. Jules, any quibbles?
I mean, I'm sure the Carnival has done Shaka a lot of good, clearly, because for once there's a bit of sense in this power ranking compared to usual.
Yep.
You know, I like it.
I like
Bayern Munich at top. I would have given a bit more love to Atalanta and pushed them a bit more.
Yeah.
But I agree with Stevie, though. Real Madrid winning the Clásico and dropping 4 places. It's a bit harsh, no?
You always say European
Jews,
football
Jews
more.
Almost talked themselves into invite to Trinidad Carnival, but no more.
That's
it.
That's something we
You're
want
not
to
invited
see,
anymore, yeah. Julian.
I enjoyed Getafe's very brief stay in your power rankings, by the way.
You're invited to next Carnival?
Very brief.
Jules just says he wasn't coming anyway.
Thanks to Stevie and Shaka, to Jules and Sid. Extra Time is coming next. And off we go down that twisty, turny path known as Extra Time. Yeah.
Oh, it's a twisty, turny one.
Oh, it's like it's a mighty twist and turn today. Moritz gets us started for Stevie. Igalo or Origi?
Ooh.
Simple choice.
Ooh.
One or the other.
Origi.
Yeah. No.
Well, he's 100% fit. Igalo's not 100% fit.
He looked pretty good
Two
today,
nice scores against Derby.
It was against Derby, but you did
thank
look
you.
But it was two good finishes, though.
Yeah.
No, listen.
I'm going to Gallo.
Listen, you get him the ball 5 yards for goal, he'll finish.
I'm going to Gallo.
Mm. Ask him to run 40 yards.
You're just biased.
You might see a different...
You're just biased. I'm going to Gallo.
Another either-or from the Bread Devil, Shaka.
Yeah.
Who's the better goalkeeper right now, De Gea or Romero? With a little...
Jesus.
I thought you might like that.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
To be fair, if there's a big game tomorrow, you've got to take De Gea.
Yeah, you played De Gea.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
But.
There is a but.
A lot more mistakes these days.
I know. It's just that. What?
Jules, you want to weigh on the goalkeeping question? De Gea or Romero?
I'll go for Henderson. Is that possible? Can I do that?
Some gloves on Henderson.
You write in your own candidate. I guess you can. You can just write it in the bottom of your ballot sheet.
That's allowed. David wants to bring Sid into the conversation. What's the real story with Sarabia? Asked David.
I assume David means Eder Sarabia, the number two at Barcelona. The manager at the weekend, obviously, is Quique Setién in the Clásico, but Eder Sarabia is his number two, and the cameras caught him during the game, commenting the game to some of the people sitting alongside him, including the goalkeeping coach, including Quique Setién himself. Now, some of these were kind of technical comments, and some of them were comments of a man who was frustrated as chances were being missed, and swearing and using quite colourful language. And there's been a huge, huge amount of focus on this over the last few days. Now, on one very basic level, I can't help but feel that this is a bit daft. This is basically a man doing his job. You know, the assistant coach is there to tell the manager some of the things that he's seeing that he's wrong, that he thinks might need correcting. An assistant manager who cares about his team is going to lose his head a bit when a really good chance is missed, when the passes aren't the right ones, when the decisions being made are mistaken. That said, it is true that Quique Setién has said that the image, the kind of the impression that was given, and the if you like, the reputation of Barcelona maybe is slightly damaged by this, and that Eder Sarabia will have to calm down a bit. It's not really in his nature, though. This is what Sarabia is. It's the way he lives football. And as I say, I fundamentally, at a basic level, can't see a huge amount wrong with it.
Mm. David has got to be pleased. I know. He got the real story there.
I wonder what if we had Cameron and Stevie Nicol on this airlines. How that would have all played out in the press.
Right. Tell you what, honestly, if they had stuck a camera on me for 90 minutes, all my players would have thought I hated every single one of them. Because I did. You know, you talk about... would do something, I'd talk to Paul and go, I told you he was going to do it. How many times have I told them? And then he'd come over to take a throw and I'd be like, that's a game, well done, go on, keep it going, yeah.
Well, it's with great pleasure we welcome Hislop Sharkbeak back to Extra Time. Been a while since he sent in a question. Jules, I'm actually going to have you answer this first. Who should be England's number one?
Right, that's a big debate. I mean, I mentioned Henderson for United. I think he's having such a strong season that he deserves, for example, to be called up in March for the two games in March if they happen at the end of the month. And for then Southgate to have a look at him, a proper look at him with the goalkeeping coaches as well, and then decide. I still think that Jordan Pickford has a lot of flaws, and we've seen that this season with Everton. I'm not sure about Pope either. I still think that this season hasn't been as good as the previous one. So I think Henderson has a good shout, but I could also see why he might choose that Southgate might choose Pickford for his past games with England already.
Is Pickford automatic at this point, Shane?
Yeah, he is. Yeah. And as opposed to go against the question as to who should be, who will be England's number one, is Jordan Pickford. One, because he's not done anything wrong in an England shirt. I don't think he's lost Southgate's confidence. And secondly, and listen, I understand the criticism and the concern around Pickford, but a few years ago in leaving Sunderland, I thought there was even more cause for concern. And then you saw his performances at the World Cup. As a result, I don't think you change. Not now.
Stevie, why did Liverpool get a pass on giving up on competition? Not sure that's accurate, but others like Bayern, Barca or Juventus would get torched for it. Surely you need to aspire to as many trophies as possible to be amongst the best teams in history, I think. We certainly questioned Liverpool's approach.
I don't think they got a pass.
No.
You know, we were talking on here about all the criticism that Jurgen Klopp had gotten about the FA Cup. So you can't say that they haven't been criticised. And at the end of the day, it's come down to a team. Listen, most teams are hoping to get a bit of silverware. Liverpool are in a position where they can pick what is more important to win. And that's where they're coming from. So I don't think that's correct to say that they didn't get any criticism at all.
Paul Johnson Togg, meanwhile, good question this. What's your biggest pet hate with the modern game? I'll give you mine just to get us going. Joint scarves. Oh, should be
joint
banned.
Scarf.
Yeah, no, with both teams on the same scarf. That is everything that's wrong with modern football for me. Go ahead.
I don't know what the top of that. I really don't.
I don't know whether I get more upset with players that fall over after the merest touch. Or I get more annoyed at the pudding-head officials that give free kicks for it. Somewhere in between the two.
Mixture of both.
Mixture of both.
Yeah. You got any pet hates lurking in there, Shagger?
I've got
a lot, by the way.
Go on, give us another one. Because I need one. Give me one. I need one.
Millions of them.
I need one. I don't have one.
A lot of shaking hands and cuddling each other every 2 minutes. Right, it's your throw on. Well done, everybody's having a cuddle question.
No cuddles allowed. Sage, do you concur?
I'm going to pick up actually on your complaint about half and half scarves, and this is something that a lot of people complain about. I must admit, I slightly buck the trend in this, in that I don't have a big problem with half and half scarves as such. So, for example, if you go to a really big game and there's a half and half scarf, let's say for argument's sake we're talking about it in the show, the Copa del Rey final, Athletic Bilbao, Real Sociedad, that's a half and half scarf that I kind of think, yeah, I can see why that's a nice souvenir of this game. What I don't get, and this is where I completely agree with you, is the half and half scarf for every match.
Yes.
Right now, I don't, with the greatest of respect, and please forgive me, fans of these two teams, but I don't want a half and half scarf of Norwich against Sheffield United. You know, that is not the game to be buying up. But you will see them sold for that game. You think, because obviously, look, there are a lot of people who go to a game as a one-off. There are a lot of people who go as football tourists. And so if you turn up and you go, yeah, I want a half and half scarf for this game. But, you know, if it's Doncaster Rovers against Bristol City, forget it.
Jules, are you a...
A bit harsh, isn't it? So it doesn't matter who you support as long as they're a big club and you've got loads of dough.
No, Steve, no, that's exactly the point. No, hang on. No, I'm not at all. This is exactly the point. As you're saying, it doesn't matter who you support. No, that's the whole point. If you support a team, you don't buy a half and half scarf. You have the scarf of your team. Yeah. But if you're going to a game where maybe you don't support a team or it's an occasion or it's a one-off, then you do it. But as I say, unless maybe, you know, as I said, Doncaster against Bristol City, all right, if they get to a cup final, if they get to the ZDS or whatever these cup finals are called these days, right, then great. But if it's just a standard average game, that's where I'm not having it.
I have to say, I retract my statement, Sydney. You're 100% correct.
Yeah.
Jules, pet peeves in the modern game? Anything else?
Yeah, I've got a few, like Stevie, swapping shirt at halftime. It's the one I don't really understand why you can't wait another 45 minutes to swap your shirt if that's what you want. And the second one is people in the stands, in the stadiums, celebrating a goal when the linesman has had his flag up for the last 10 minutes and they're still celebrating like crazy when you know clearly that the goal will be disallowed, well, at least before VAR. Always look at the linesman before celebrating, please.
You're not harsh, right? I
you are happy go lucky.
I'm like, yeah,
no,
I'm
no
like,
all
right, so
at all.
But it's, I
all,
mean,
it's all gravy.
Yeah, it's just fun.
It's all football.
Okay, you're the top.
Music.
Yeah.
That's the other one, music.
Oh, music,
right?
Yeah,
so
music
you go
is,
to. Oh. You, right now, and obviously, a good selection of music, then great.
Yeah.
Right. But when you go into a ground, and I was very conscious of this, for example, in midweek at Real Madrid's game against Manchester City, but it's something that happens at all grounds, although Real Madrid do choose particularly bad music, I must say, pre-game. But you've got a big game. You want to have a comeback. Right. So you get the fans in early. Let them make the atmosphere. You don't need to make the atmosphere for them. You don't need to put the music. Let them sing the songs. But in fact, what happens is they can't. And then at half time, the music comes back on again. There's someone probably trying to score a goal from the halfway line down on the pitch. Probably, by the way, sponsored by a betting company. And, you know, just over and over again, it's like, look, let's actually let the fans play a part here. Let's not take agency away from the supporters, which, of course, is, I suppose, in a nutshell, one of the biggest problems of modern football is how much agency has been taken away from the people that really matter.
Tell you what, me and Robbo, right? Me and Stuart were sat before the Champions League final in Madrid.
Yeah.
And, what, 3-4 minutes before the kick-off, they've got a group on playing, and the two of us are sitting there, you know, the two old geezers and the Muppets going... What's this all about? We don't want to hear it. Just start the game early.
I have no problem with that either.
Everybody comes in to watch football. Not just sit and listen to
that end, the only thing I have an issue with is cheerleaders. And that's more an American thing. You don't see that out in Europe.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I'm like, let's
have some fun. We got there in the end. There's something that bothers you. And it's cheerleaders.
That's all. But you don't see that often. Let's go.
Right. Well, there'll be no half and half scarves on tomorrow's show. We can promise you that. Or cheerleaders. Maybe there will be. ESPN FC available every day on Plus.